last weekend, since Deacon Stephan was preaching, I decided to work on a long overdue plumbing project at home. I know that's a bad idea now, but the night before I gathered my tools and reflected on what I knew about plumbing, that didn't take long, and the process that I would need to take to complete the job, but most important, the fact of the matter was that I was trying to remember that mighty mantra that all the plumbers used, righty-tighty, lefty-loosey. For moral support, I just may require some of your assistance for my plumbing demonstration, but don't worry, you can stay seated. But you have to say it with me across the aisles. Ready? Right to tight. Your turn. Left to loose. One more time. Okay, good. Now we're on the right path. So, it almost is like a Super Bowl chant going on there. Okay, now remember those parts. You're going to need them a little bit later. So early in the morning, I set about my task, listening to Deacon Stephan's homily in the bathroom. Don't tell him that. And after it was over, there was something that he said about hearing a combination of instruments and the way of hearing and listening that stuck with me. Little did I know what was about to transpire and how important that was going to be. So, as I began the project, I turned off the water. There we go. And I took the toilet off of its seat, I loosened the bolts, I removed the wax ring, and I put the new ring on, put the toilet, reseated it, I turned the water on, and ta-da, that was it, right? It was all done. Easy enough, I thought. And then came the most important part of a plumber's job. I waited, and I listened. I could hear water dripping and running. And I watched and I waited and I listened. Everything looked dry, but I could still hear water. One of you must be wrong, is what I'm thinking to myself. Okay, one more time. Right must be tight, left must be loose. Okay, here we go. Check the pipes one more time. Everything's dry, everything's toot. One more time. Okay. Well, maybe we're both wrong, because I know I couldn't be wrong in this situation, right? And I ran to the basement to check the pipes, and to my horror, I found water leaking in the basement. It was a glorious flood. What I thought was my project was really not the problem at all. Across the room, I could see a corroded pipe spraying this beautiful hue of water through the sun like a rainbow. Not a really pretty sight. But then this flood in my basement, and all I was hearing now was this giant mob in my head, and it was yelling, "The right is too uptight." As intense as it could be, I was so angry, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe this whole thing was happening, and the left was loosey-goosey. I'm enjoying the rainbow coming from a spraying pipe. And it was just too much. I was exhausted, I couldn't take anymore, so I ran upstairs, I turned off the water, and sat in the chair. Now, I learned two things about that. One, make sure everybody goes to the bathroom before you turn the water off to the house. The second thing is make sure nobody's in the shower. The mob in my head won. I could hear no more and nothing was making sense. This mob mentality that I had was so prevalent in me and is now so prevalent and consuming in our society. We can all get there very quickly these days. It doesn't matter if you're on the right or if you're on the left. It's just that we lose sight of the facts. And it's those lack of facts, that mob, that almost got Jesus today in the gospel. What did we learn? We learned that in this uprising, the mob was not a failure on Jesus' part to communicate. No, instead, what we found was a failure of understanding of a discontent people that were focused inward on themselves. And they asked, "How can his words be? How can he know all these things? Is this not Joseph's son?" So focused inward, so much so, that they missed the Son of God standing before their very eyes. This was typical of the Greco-Roman society of the time. They were very inwardly focused people. They were taking care of themselves. And this is exactly why Jesus Christ was so revolutionary. He challenged everyone to look out and to look up, not in and down. Well, at school, we've been studying this early Christian civilization and this mob mentality. And you may think that mobs have very little to do with theology. However, when you compare it to early Christian persecutions and Nero's circus and the Council of Jerusalem and the Jewish revolt, it all becomes clear. And we find that mobs at the time actually had mobs themselves. What a society centers on, what a society focuses on, is very telling. Our words become our thoughts, our actions become our habits, and our habits become our beliefs, and that is who we are. It's a very slippery ground, like water on the basement floor. In the Bible, James writes, "Do you not know that to be a lover of the world means to be at enmity with God? Therefore, whoever wants to be a lover of the world makes himself an enemy of God." And yet thousands of years later, after these words were written down, we find ourselves focused in on ourselves and on our world. We hear, but we do not listen. And we see, but we do not understand. We again find ourselves in a world surrounded by injustice on many different levels, like water spraying from a pipe. Stephen Covey, author of 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, wrote, "People don't listen with the intent to understand, but they listen only with the intent to reply." We are in a world filled on both sides with very angry politicians and policies meant to serve ego rather than serve people. Fans, celebrities, trends fill the airways of God's creation. Typically, demonstrations of reactionary intolerance, what I've now coined the phrase of calling a virtual mob of social media. My students were left with this mental debris from the Right to Life March and the controversy surrounding the students from Covington Catholic. A great teaching moment, to be sure. This great clashing of cymbals and gongs was filled with viral judging and instant response time is something that this generation of young people will have to deal with regularly. In this virtual mob mentality that is now so sadly prevalent in our society, I might suggest that the real time is simply too fast. It doesn't allow for a processing so critical and necessary to a higher calling. Judgment is no longer based in fact, reason, or understanding. Instead, it's just raw, unfiltered emotion that spills out all over the place. So what are we to do? How are we to remind ourselves to be carried? Well, fortunately, Paul's letter to the Church of Corinth provides us with some insight, just as the men and women who have accepted God in that time, in ancient times, were understanding. We too today are called to realize the implications of our own baptisms. If we are truly Christians, then the fact is our actions are not about any issue at all, ever, but about love and kindness and how to show it. See, we're still called to be revolutionaries today. If you really listen to Paul's letter at Corinth, you'll see that he reminds us more of what love is not than what love is. Love is not jealous, pompous, or inflated. It's not rude, and it does not seek its own self-interest. It's not quick-tempered or brood over injury. It does not rejoice over wrongdoing. Love is simply patient and kind. You see, God gave us mouths that close, ears that don't, that must tell us something. Paul reminds us of what love is not, for us to recognize that in order to listen, in order to understand, we must first intentionally hear and compassionately listen. Perhaps Paul's points about love is that love is not supposed to be complicated at all. That love is God, and love never fails. When we take our eyes off of this and we focus in on ourselves, on our desires, on our thoughts, on our objectives, that which the world wants us to hear and not what God wants us to hear, then we actually transport ourselves back in time and we move backwards instead of forward. Pope Francis reminds us that the root of peace lies in the capacity to listen. Like Paul, I would challenge us to live, breathe, and eat the love of our God and to share his food in the world indeed and in a world in need. We are called to turn ourselves inside out and turn our downtrodden selves right side up. Like the water that is such a curse, it turns into a blessing. Water saturates even the strongest walls and creeps even into the darkest of corners. It softens the most rigid boxes and soaks into the most water-resistant fabric. Love, like water, smooths off the rough edges of indifference and intolerance and judgment. It allows us to flow between and come together to hold one another without being cut by the shards of words and thoughtless actions. It spares us of a world serving only themselves. Just like being underneath water, there's clarity in silence. My plumbing mom demonstration was meant to demonstrate the need to listen. It's easy to say, "I love you," to people that you agree with. Today, listen, and you may find another that does not know the power of love and peace. Sometime this week, I want you to find someone that you don't see eye to eye with. I want you to text them and let them know the peace of listening to another that comes first. Then we can begin a flash mob of virtual love.